2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
What's up, everyone? Kevin Allen here, aka The Geek, and today we're here to discuss some DFS strategy with my man, DFS Army Millie Maker winner, GPP Dominator extraordinaire, Bobby Wow One. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, what's up, Geek? Doing well. How are you, man?
I'm excited. I've been waiting, excited for this one, excited to chat with you about DFS strategy. And specifically, the reason that we're doing this video today is because you had DM me in our Slack group, and you were talking a little bit about inherent biases in mass multi-entry and embracing that, and sort of just talking about a little bit some of your wins and how you felt that your biases, your leans essentially were what led to these wins. And you know, we were having a little bit of a back and forth discussing how would one quantify that. What is the teachable moment from that? And I do think there are teachable moments, but I wanted to bring you on here and talk this out in this video form so that kind of everybody could get a look and a sense of kind of what goes through. Everybody likes to hear from a big winner, but you're not just a one-time winner. We've got those. You know, I have this beautiful little background here of just a complete domination of MLB in a showdown one day. And, you know, multiple top 10 finishes in the FanDuel Millie Maker. So let's go back to the topic at hand. Embracing bias. Now, one of the most impressive tournament wins that I've ever seen was what you did in that World Series showdown game. Or I don't know if it was the playoffs, the World Series. We've got it as the background of this video. First place, second place, third place, fourth. Unheard of. So tell me about that game, that showdown, what you did and why it was a unique approach.
I think that, I mean, that was crazy, man. I still, that was probably a one-time only thing with that. But I think at the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things with that contest, it was, here's two teams. One is extremely popular. I think it was the Astros. And the way that MLB showdowns work, I think there's an MVP. Then there's an all-star, which is also weighted a little bit less than the MVP, a little bit more than the flex, and the flex. So you've got more options in terms of how you construct the lineup compared to like a football showdown where there's just one MVP and a bunch of flex.
Now, can I assume, so, because I don't play MLB DFS, and I'm not sure who played this one. My assumption here is that there must have been an elite pitcher on this game or a very good pitcher. And so the entirety of the masses were thinking can't really stack against that, right? So you went against it. Tell me a little, get me those details. Like, what happened there?
Yeah, there was an elite pitcher. I can't remember which one it was for the Astros. And the Astros were playing the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, who aren't really known as much for their offense. So there's already this big bias at, you know, Astros pitcher. They have great hitters. Tampa Bay is kind of the small market, less known team. And so the thought process was, after looking at some of the notes and watching, you know, baseball the whole season, hey, the Rays can hit, and especially some of these guys lower in the order who may only have to face the starting pitcher one time. So if these guys are going to be really low owned, what would it look like to create in the domination station a bunch of lineups with these guys actually filling that 1.5 MVP slot and the 1.25 all-star or whatever those multiplications are.
And an embrace of the variance of MLB where, you know, Houston had all the big name hitters. I don't know their names, but I know they have some big name hitters on that team. And, you know, everybody gets sucked in by those big names, but it's a high variance sport. And all of a sudden when all these kind of like middling no-namers come through, this guy happened to hit the home run or whatever, you wind up with something I have the little screenshot up here that looks ridiculous. So, that's spectacular. Now, what I would say you did there was essentially embracing a contrarian approach more than a bias, right? Yep. That wasn't a bias. That was just, you know what? This is something that you've DM'd with me in the past as well about other showdowns and things like that, where you're like, hey, you know, whoever this most popular must be played guy. Well, we could even talk about tonight. Tonight, it's probably Michael Thomas. Now, if you play tonight's, that, you know, tonight is a game where you have the Saints going up against the Colts, and the Saints are at home, and Michael Thomas has beasted at home every single game except for one all season. So is that a situation where you look at Michael Thomas and you go, ooh, I'm going to fade him? I mean, is that your first thought? Or Michael Thomas too good? Because I don't think anything could be too good if you told me I either want to fade Lamar Jackson or I don't want to play the slate 3 days ago.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of it has to do with upside, right? So, you know, for tonight, you've got Michael Thomas, you've got Drew Brees, who are going to be crazy chalk. And, you know, what's nice about a showdown is you don't have to make the decision as much of, do I play him or do I not play him? It's more about your MVP. You know, do I think somebody could score more than Michael Thomas in the MVP, even though most likely he's gonna have a pretty decent score no matter what. So, you know, for me, like I will have tonight, I'm gonna have a lot of Jacoby Brissett in the MVP. I think he's gonna have to throw the ball a bunch. You guys have alluded to this in the notes. And he looked a lot healthier last week. So, you know, guys like him, Marlon Mack, if TY's out, I'll go as Pascal. People to kind of get off that super popular play without even having to fully fade them from the lineup, if that makes sense.
So you're still essentially saying, yeah, I'm going to play Michael Thomas. But what if Michael Thomas doesn't smash and everybody's got him at MVP, but all of a sudden Jacoby Brissett runs one in and he throws for two. And next thing you know, Jacoby Brissett smashed, or he didn't smash, but he outscored Michael Thomas by 2 fantasy points. And that was more than enough to be the difference between winning the tournament and tying with 1 million people for whatever and not making any and losing money. Because we know you've been attacking the FanDuel one. It's interesting that you default to FanDuel more, but that you've been attacking these FanDuel ones. And you know what happens when you tie? Sometimes you still lose money. Like you put 150 in, you tied for first and you lost money. And you're like, I couldn't have done better than first place. And I lost money just now. That wasn't very fun. So that can happen. Yeah, it's an interesting approach. And I think people definitely don't embrace that volatility the way they should. Like the probability of something happen is generally lower than what we think it is. Like the probability of Michael Thomas being the highest scorer or Drew Brees being the highest scorer on this slate is high, but it's not 90%. It could be 65%.
Yeah. And we have to understand too, right? Like in a showdown slate on a GPP, even if you do have the best lineup with Michael Thomas in it, like you said, you're going to tie. So, I mean, one of the other things you always say is weird stuff happens on these showdown slates, and it's true. More often than a Sunday, you see
I say that expression slightly differently.
if I wasn't at the church, maybe I would too. But
I know. I say it slightly differently. So, all right, the secondary, because I don't want to focus in on tonight's slate. That's not really what the point of this is about. The second thing I wanted to address, and this was even more. I can't even help. I'm staring at 50,000, 15,000, 10,000, 5. I don't. It's unreal. Like in one slate, you did what it takes normal people like a lifetime of playing DFS of achieving. And it's just one. It's so amazing. That MLB that's showing in the background is just like unheard of. I've never seen it done before. But that is the beauty of embracing being different without being stupid.
That's so a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's without being stupid. This wasn't stupid. It's MLB. Oh, it's like a sharp play in MLB to stack the lineup against a good quarter, a good pitcher. That's like what you're supposed to do. Literally, the way that we design, and to be clear, you use the domination station to run these lineups.
That's right. Yep.
Hell yeah. I love it. Proving the tools. So The equivalent of it, one of the examples I give a lot, and you mentioned with tying a lot of people, one of the examples I always go to, I've done this many times, you've heard it, I'm sure, is I talk about March Madness and how if you're going up against 1,000 people in a bracket and you choose Duke because they're the favorite, well, 50% of the people chose Duke. So what did you actually accomplish when they won? Now, you give them a 30% chance of winning the tournament. 50% of the people in your group chose them. So now, first you had a 1/3 odd of being right. But even when you were right and you only had a 33% chance, now it's a 1 in 500 shot at beating these other 500 brackets. Good luck with that, right? Ain't going to happen. You need a second something unique to pair up with Duke, because Duke alone just doesn't get you anywhere in the field. And that's a little bit of playing Lamar Jackson. It's like, yeah, we know he's probably going to smash. We know he's probably going to break the slate open. But if I'm there with it, that only got me set. Now, the difference with Lamar Jackson was like his probability of doing that was like 80%. Like right. The probability was way higher than with him than it might be even with a Michael Thomas tonight or with some other players that are like a wide receiver ever. Wide receivers are always inherently volatile. Like what happens if Michael Thomas doesn't score a touchdown?
And the beauty of that too is with Lamar, it's different, right? He could go off, you know, without throwing at anybody or with throwing to some no-name clowns or, you know, second string tight end, whatever.
Who with all Thomas, did Seth Roberts. What, right. I mean, every name that you've never heard of. All my turds. All of them.
Gus Edwards.
I mentioned them all. Yeah, but yeah.
But with Michael Thomas, like, let's look at him for a second. And this is true of any showdown slate. If he doesn't play well and you're thinking, okay, I'm not going to play him in MVP, that has some effects too. Because if he's not playing well, chances are that means Drew Brees isn't playing well either. So now you're looking at two of the chalkiest guys just because one guy doesn't perform. Now you have a real edge on the field. Does that make sense?
We've seen it. We've seen, not to say that it's frequent or common, but sure. We've seen it. We saw a game where Taysom Hill scored two touchdowns, which led to a terrible game for Drew Brees, led to a terrible game for Michael Thomas. Listen, how many of us on that Thursday? I mean, it wasn't that long ago. And so if that happens twice a year, what is that, 20% of the time or 15? Like, it wasn't that long ago that I had Michael Thomas going into the final game, and I'm thinking, I gots this. You know, and all of a sudden, he was the Fredo who betrayed me. Fredo Thomas. I won't call him Fredo, though. The next week, he redeemed himself because I went all in and the following week. And, of course, until the fourth quarter, I'm like, not again, Fredo. Not again. You did it. And then now he got 30 points. It was fine last week. But I was thinking he's doing it to me again. So, yeah, wide receiver is volatile. And again, if we're talking FanDuel, it's very fadable because I just did a full video where I looked at the returns and it showed that Drew Brees is the one who has the good game. If Michael Thomas is beasting, it almost always means Drew Brees has outscored him 75 to 85% of the time. So if Michael Thomas did 21, Brees got 23. It's been close. Very close. But the second part of what I wanted to explore. So yeah, it's being smart about your contrarianism, not getting completely ridiculous with it. But there are smart ways to do it, but understanding what are the consequences. So let's talk about the main topic, which was embracing your bias. Tell me how you've done that and what you've seen both positively and negatively from going in with a bias, a not perceived, but a real, we call it a bias, we just call it a lean and say, I like this spot, I'm going all in. Have you done that before?
Absolutely. Yeah. More and more, I feel like it really comes down to two basic questions for me. Where are you taking your stand? Because in a GPP, you better be taking a stand. And two, why are you taking a stand?
You just said something that's huge. This is something I talk about a lot and people don't get it. You just said you better take a stand in GPP. So let's expand on that. In GPP, you better take a stand. Why? Tell me why. Why do I need to take a stand in GPP? I'm making 150. I should be able to cover every eventuality, no?
Because like you said, there are thousands and thousands of other people that are creating lineups and they're spreading themselves thin. You taking a stand gives you, you know, gives you much better odds. If your player goes off, you're actually going to be able to win some money potentially. Whereas if you're spread out, you have one lineup, most likely it's going to be similar to everyone else's. Even if you do end up in first place, like you talked about with the March Madness odds.
Let's expand this to talk about the FanDuel main slate Millie Maker. And you have multiple times this season. Obviously you won it. $1 million. What? Bobby's the only person amongst us whose wife doesn't mind him spending all his time playing DFS now. She's like, no, go play, honey. It's fine. I got the kids. I got them. It's all good. I'm taking them out. You stay. Research football. It's fine. They're the only one. That's it. Even my wife. She's like, you're always watching your football tape. Come hang out with us. I'm like, so I have a business. No, you don't care. So you've had multiple occasions of being up top there. So I want to talk about, because for me too, and this is something I say, but it's very difficult to teach because the result of this is at least half the time, maybe more, not just is like losing a lot of money, right? You have to embrace losing a lot with this approach. But let's talk about heavy exposure. So you've had a couple of top finishes. People always ask me, how much exposure should I get to any one player? I set a universal 30%. This is not what I do. This is what people ask me. They say, I set a universal 30% max exposure rule on all my players. Am I doing it wrong? Bobby, I'm going to throw this to you. Are they doing it wrong? They sent a universal max of 30%, no one more than that. Making 100.
I don't know that I'd say they're doing it wrong necessarily, but I think there's better ways to do it. I just think you have to be willing, especially in the bigger contests, to take a bigger risk. Because chances are, if you're thinking about it and it scares you, it scares other people too. And most people aren't going to be willing to be scared. So you need to step into that. You need to take another step further into that, you know, additional ownership or exposure or whatever that might be in those bigger contests. You just have to.
Embracing being uncomfortable. One of the things I tell people is the tournaments that I've won over the years, the times that I've won, like that, I got a banner. The times that I've won, I've gone all in on more than one spot, not just one. My best ever tournaments is where I'll have two or three players potentially all in. Not one.
Yeah.
Multiples. Mm-hmm. I rarely go all in on a wide receiver, for example. That's pretty unusual for me, although I'll go up to 50%, maybe more if he's Michael Thomas. Only Michael Thomas. But I've gone up to 50%. But I've gone 100% on multiple running backs in the same slate, more than one. And the reason being, if you're right, my feeling is this. If I've got a chalk running back and I'm 60% and the field is 40%, or even if it's not a chalk, like this week, maybe with a Kenyon Drake, like if you had the cojones to go all in on a guy who was getting a lot of looks, was in the right offense, just hadn't delivered the last couple of weeks, tough matchups. But if you had it to go all in on a guy like that, cheap, high floor, and it works out, that's how you win the million. And that's to me how you win the million. So tell me, what is the highest exposure you've gone when you've run your 150 in the $9 contest?
Definitely 100%. Yeah, 100%, especially for running backs. I think my second highest exposure is receivers. Quarterback is usually where I'll spread it a little bit thinner.
But so, you've gone 100% on multiple. Have you gone 100% on more than one running back in the same contest?
Yeah. There have been some contests where I've gone 100% with two, and it comes down to, are you giving yourself the best chance to win? Because you see people win with one-off lineups, right? You know, it happens, rarely, but it does happen. Or even with a couple of lineups. And yes, so that it can happen. But, you know, I think one thing the Army always talks about is, are you giving yourself the best chance to win a contest? And that is taking stands, probably, you know, maxing it out, depending on how big the contest is, those types of things. So yeah, you know, sometimes you have to take a stand because there's a running back in a good spot, but he's projected to be 40% owned. So the only way to get a real edge is to be, you know, 90 or 100%.
I was 100% on Chris Carson on FanDuel yesterday.
And it turned, that was a good move. I mean, he was a beast, and he was only like 35% owned, I think, and at least in the contest I was in.
Surprisingly too low. I mean, you needed some other spots to get the win, but to me, that was like a pretty easy one. But so the question then becomes, because I want to keep bringing it around to the original thought process, which was personal bias from watching sports and having certain approaches. And give me a scenario, an example of when just your personal, I don't want to call it fandom because that's super lame for the purposes of DFS, right? You could be a fan of a team, but again, I'm a fan of my team that I put my lineup. I'm only a fan of my lineup now.
Right.
Like, yeah, I like my team, but like not that much. Like I don't watch the game exclusively anymore. I'm watching every game. I don't have time for one game. I watch every game. But give me a time when you're biased. Like you went into a slate and you went, you know what? This is my lean. This is how I'm going. And I'm just going to do everything. Just give me an example. I'm just going to play it. This is my way of playing it. And was it a game theory lean, or was it more of a, hey, I watched the game last week and, you know, Kamara, he's just not scoring touchdowns. He's chalk tonight, but I'm not seeing it. I'm fading him completely, or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think it's a mix. I think there's a balance. And what's fascinating about this is I think in DFS world or sports betting or whatever it is, I think bias and leaning is sometimes looked at as bad, sometimes looked at as something that can hinder your ability to be a good player. And I actually think, you know, in the right balance combined with the right tools, it can actually be an edge. And so, I mean, like even thinking back to the Millie, Mark Ingram was that guy for me. And in this scenario, you know, what's kind of cool about your bias is, I'm a Chicago sports fan, so that's one side of the bias. Usually that means my players are low owned because the teams have sucked so badly. But let's look at Ingram for now. Like everyone loves Lamar Jackson. Mark Ingram, I've been looking at for, you know, a year. I drafted him on my fantasy team because I'd been following him closely. And so that was Lamar's highest projected week in terms of his ownership. And knowing Ingram, I was like, no, I'm gonna take a stand on Ingram because I like what I've seen from him. He's on my team, so I'm already rooting for him anyway. Let's combine that with some game theory, thinking, you know, I'm fading Lamar, like we talked about in the interview last time. So that means somebody scoring a touchdown that's gonna be Ingram. And that led to the victory for me.
That was huge. And that's actually like what you did there. We talked about it on the interview because I see it different. That's a DFS approach that I use all the time, that like I try to train my brain to see these things. Whenever something is chalk, some sort of outcome is chalk, one move in tournaments that you want to make is consider what happens to cause that chalk to fail. Mm-hmm. And then what would that benefit? So whether it's this picture in the background here of a chalk stud pitcher failing and the offense against him producing all the runs at massively low ownership, whether it was the $1 million win where that was a week, 100%. I don't remember who they played. I don't remember. But all I know is everybody's on Lamar Jackson, Lamar Jackson, Lamar Jackson. Even as a quarterback, he might have been 35% owned. All of his weapons, Marquise Brown, Mark Andrews, everybody was all over that group. That was a special week for Lamar Jackson. It must have been a great match. Maybe it was Cincinnati. It must have been some bad team that they were facing. Was it Cincinnati?
I don't remember who it was, but it was a bad team. Somebody like Cincinnati.
It was some pushover garbage Miami. I don't know. It wasn't Miami, but something. And you should remember this. You need to like,
I know, it's terrible.
Make a shirt or buy a jersey. What do you do? How do you not have a Mark Ingram jersey? Crazy.
That's terrible, man. I should
have bought you. You know what? I should have bought you that. That's on me. That should have been me. buying you that. That's my fault. And now I'm taking the blame for that. That's on me. But what you did there is a move. Like, I it's funny because I don't play MLB DFS outside of testing our tools out. I just don't. Because I need a break mentally between the seasons. Are you looking up the lineup to see who they played?
I was trying to see, yeah.
Yeah, but that is an approach that you should be using. And if you're watching this, you guys should be using this. Figure out who the chalk is. And especially if the chalk is just a mediocre chalk who's there because the slate just doesn't have any other better options. And for your tournament entry, play the thing that will cause that chalk to fail. Think through whatever that chalk piece is, whether it's a pitcher, whether it's a quarterback, whether it's a running back or wide receiver, whoever it is. So in your case, and that's why I said it was so genius, everybody was taking Lamar Jackson this week. And you said the only thing that will cause Lamar Jackson to fail is if Mark Ingram had. Now, how much percentage exposure did you have to Mark Ingram? I can't imagine a ton. He wasn't doing much, but did you have a lot? I mean, how much of a stand did you take in that contest? Do you remember? Oh, 757 primetime saying it was the Chiefs.
Yes. Yeah. That sounds right. So that's the beauty of the bias. Like with analytics and data, that in itself is going to put more ownership on a player. So that's where the edge comes in with Ingram. I knew he had just as much of an opportunity to run the ball against the Chiefs, and watching him, I knew what his upside was. And so my exposure didn't have to be 100%. Because his ownership projection was like 2%, maybe even less.
Yeah.
So I think I ended up with 25 or 30%,
which was massively
10 times over the field, yeah. Or 15 times over the field. That's the edge.
That's the beauty of the ownership projection as well. So you could start to figure out, all right, how much exposure do I need to this player to make it an edge in my overall tournament exposure? Because you do have to look at your entries when you're mass multi entering as a basket. Like a stock portfolio, right? So if my portfolio is massively overweight Mark Ingram and he has a good game, it's going to lift the entirety of the portfolio. And hopefully he will find his way onto teams that are good all elsewhere. Because again, we know winning a Millie Maker is not just about picking Mark Ingram on a good week. It's about picking every single player who has an incredible day all at once. And it's really, really, really hard to do. And most of us will spend our whole lifetime trying to win one and never will. That's how hard it is. That's how long those odds are. And you've had top 10 finishes more than once this season in those. So the approach absolutely works. I'll give an example of what I did at the King of the Beach. That was a similar thought, but again, a little bit smaller scale. I'm not running 100, but in that contest, it was a Matt Ryan chalk week. The Falcons were taking on the Bucks, I think. And of course, you got to load up on the Falcons. Everybody taking on the Bucks, got to load up. Everybody was loading up on Matt Ryan to Julio. And there was a bit of a FOMO going on where it's like, I'm thinking like, well, Julio hasn't had a good game all year. Now I'm going to be 50% exposed. Like, I'm going to just go with the other 50% of these people. Now, I wanted to just completely say, forget Matt Ryan also. And if I had, cojones, I would have done it. I was like on Brian Fitzpatrick, 25 points, 5K. I was on it. I clicked it. I talked about it in the Players Club that Saturday in my video. Fitzpatrick is your best play this weekend. And of course, when it came down to it, heart pounding. I'm taking stands elsewhere. So I said, I got to be a little different. So I went and just put Ridley in there and faded Julio, which was good.
Yep.
I was like, I'm not playing Julio. What are you, nuts? That was like the ultimate, I'm not doing this. But the true move was forget this whole thing. Or the sharpest move was play Winston at the quarterback position. Like, why not? It was because the Falcons had played good defense the two previous weeks. So there was this thought like, whoa, what if they're good now? And I'm like, they're not good now. I said it again. These were thoughts that I went over in the video. But so I had to be a little contrarian. So I went and I played Ridley, thinking let the whole group play Julio, let him bust. And if Ridley has the big game, I will leap on the crowd. And I did some other contrarian things, but I mean, it got me halfway there, you know, 14th place finish. So it wasn't bad. Had I embraced really what I wanted to do, the other piece of chalk that week was Alvin Kamara. Bad chalk. And it was obvious bad chalk. But there was no value. It was really hard to get. There were no running backs on the slate that were any good. But I don't want to talk too much about that. But the real point was, it was everybody's going to be on Julio. Let me do slightly different, but not stupid.
Right. And I think that's where the bias comes in. And I'm having a really hard time trying to figure out how to put this into words, but maybe this is it. Your bias, and let's just define bias as, you know, a leaning, a hunch, maybe it's a, you know, player you like or dislike. Your bias maybe is that final push when your heart is going like this and you've seen some things in the notes. You're like, oh, there's some flags going up. Maybe, you know, maybe that's bad chalk, or maybe that's a low owned guy I should play. The bias is the thing that pushes you over the edge to actually play that person. Like another example for me was the showdown. It was Texans Patriots. I can't stand Tom Brady. I can't stand the Patriots. Tom Brady's been playing poorly. He's getting old. I think this is probably something that's just going to be, this is who he is now this season. He finally hit that edge. Yeah. Maybe not, but it was enough for me to say, I'm not going to play Tom Brady. I'm just not going to play him in the MVP slot. And I ended up tying for first with some people, but ended up taking the showdown slate down because of that play. So bias coupled with research and notes and, you know, watching the games, I think it can be an edge, and it can be the thing that actually pushes you to take the stands that you need to be taking.
And having the stones to go all in. That's really what it comes down to. Having the stones to go all in on certain spots, where I think that's a big place where people go wrong in tournaments. I think what happens in tournaments is people try to spread around the risk so much, like I need 5% here and 2% there and a little bit here and a little bit there. And, oh, I don't want to get too exposed to this guy. Here's the thought that I want to, all right, here's a thought that a lot of people have. And I want you to explain to me like what your reaction is to it as well. I don't want to have too much of player X because, you know, if he fails, I'm dead. I'm going to lose all my money. What should they be thinking?
I think you need to look at the possible outcomes of without player X in without taking a stand on him. What's your likely path to winning and actually profiting? Because chances are player X is the risky player, right? That's where the stand comes in. I think especially on a showdown slate, you need to be taking extreme stands on people. And then, you know, on a Sunday, it's a little bit different. You got to figure out what the ownership projections are. But yeah, I think again, you need to be willing to take the risk. You need to be willing to take a stand.
And accept that when you're wrong, what one of the things I tell people is when you go all in on a player, you got to be right. I mean, or you're going to lose all your money. But when you are right, there's a good chance you're going to take down the tournament. That's the difference. Like the other day, for example, I really like Jameson Crowder as the top play for the Jets. Now he's a wide receiver. So, you know, like only goes so far, but in the analysis, and I don't know if you watched that video or mm-hmm. I actually did the notes. I don't normally do the showdown notes. I did that one because Josh was DFS up north was indisposed. He was hunting or catching a deer or something, which is awesome. But I mean, so I did the notes and I said, yeah, what's that?
Nothing. Freaking yeah. Packers.
Yeah. Oh, cause he's from up north. Yeah. There we go. You Minnesotans and Chicagoans with your rivalries. Right. So, I wrote in the notes, you know, fierce pass rush for the Ravens plus Marlon Humphreys, an elite cornerback, is going to really moot anything that Robbie Anderson can do. And the most likely beneficiary is going to be Jameson Crowder, A, because he's running short routes that a fierce pass rush would be your quick outlet to, and B, because he's got worse coverage than Marlon Humphreys, who was elite. So I said there were two major factors here pointing to Jameson Crowder being the play for the Jets. Now, he ended up doing better than I ever could have dreamed. He was the best play on the Jets. And you know, he put up 27. I wasn't expecting that. But what was interesting was, even with all of that knowledge, like, I didn't have 100%. I probably should have. I should have said, you know what? I'm going to take a stand here that I think this guy is the best play on the Jets, and I'm going to go all in. I certainly didn't do that. I had 50% or 55, and I had him in my cash game, and the cash game worked out really well, and I crushed it and all of that. But that's the kind of stand that you have to take. Had you taken the 100% stand on a player like that, the risk is if he does nothing, I lose all my money, everything. So 150 empty entries could be $1,500 down the drain.
Yeah.
But if you're right, you win $250,000. So how many times do you need to be right about that? Like, what's the ratio of having to be right? Like, how often are you wrong where you take a heavy stand, Bobby?
I'm wrong most of the time, but you know, because taking something down can be so profitable that, you know, I think it's okay to have that strategy in mind. You know, there's some laddering that you guys talk about that I think is important to note, like even fading Lamar. When I fade Lamar in GPPs, I'm usually playing him in cash to try and balance some of that out. So it's not a straight money dump when Lamar does well, or Lamar's a bad example. He's going to be the MVP.
Yeah, never,
so
don't ever.
But with anybody, right? Like, if there's somebody that is expected to do well, don't be afraid to play that person in a couple cash lineups if you're fading them in GPPs. I think it's okay to do that.
That was a really important point where your GPP entry, and this, we had a really great conversation in NBA Talk in Slack today about this, about what you should really be doing for the focal point of your entries. For a lot of people who are trying to understand, hey, how come I'm not profitable at DFS, right? And they can't understand why throwing $20 at the Millie Maker every week hasn't, you know, or 40, two entries, hasn't been a profitable approach. And it's very obvious why it's not going to, there's no chance it would ever be profitable until you win the Millie Maker. Like, okay, you know, 50 years from now, at that pace, you might win one and it could turn into a profit. But the idea was, listen, you're not going to, if this is all you're doing, you're not going to be a profitable player because, man, you need to be top 20% just to get 1.5x back. And man, how often are you going to get top 20%? You know, 40% of the time because you're twice as good as everybody else. Even if that was the case, you'd still be losing a lot of money at this contest. So there's like no way of doing it. So the way that you, I'm sure this happened for you and people who are watching this, how did you build up your bankroll to the point where you could max enter a Millie Maker? How did you get there? I know you didn't put in $25,000 to get started with playing DFS, man, because if you did, you're pretty unique.
Definitely not. I think that's the key, and people don't like to hear it as much. I didn't like to hear it, and it sucked for a while. It was a grind. But contest selection is so important. And this has been such a vast, it's so hard to be focused when it comes to these things. But contest selection is big.
All over the place with this discussion, but people want to hear from Bobby. Wow.
I don't know, man. I don't know, but it is contest selection. And so, you know, for me is looking at those smaller GPPs. I believe in tournaments. Obviously now I did before. I think that's your best bet to taking something down and being profitable. And so, you know, they have 5-cent contests, 10-cent contests. FanDuel doesn't do it as much anymore, but DraftKings has like the $1, 150 entry contest. I mean, those are the types of contests that I would encourage you to look at and start at. That, you know, taking a couple of those down, or you know, I think I finished top five in two of those, which helped me get bankroll for baseball, which I then took down, which helped me get bankroll for the Millie. But it all started with the 10-cent contests. Not only because I could afford them, but because it was a good place to learn how running 150 lineups actually works, how correlation works, how taking stands works, what that looks like played out, you know, live. So
without a ton of risk, you know,
exactly.
When you're for the first time ever mass multi-entering and you're doing it in a let's say on FanDuel in a $5 contest, and let's say it's $750 in entries, and let's say you've never put $750 in entries in to anything because your entire account only has $2,000 in it, you know, you're going to play that one scared. That's a scary one. That's like, oh man, I can't afford to lose this or I'm done. But if you do the same approach, but it's a quarter game and it's $37, or if it's at one of those dime games, it's like, you know, whatever, $10 or $15 or whatever, then you could say, you know what? I've been thinking that the sharp play, or I heard Bobby Wow on a video with the Geek talking about how the sharp move is to take a heavy stand in these contests and be right and then see what happens. So let me take a heavy stand in like 10 of these over the next 10 days. Hopefully I'm right once or twice out of the 10, because that's the part that I think people miss, is that you're losing most of the time. Like, they're not getting it. You lose most of the time when you attack these tournaments, and it doesn't feel good to lose. But if you've embraced, hey, this is my style of play, and I know that this has led to wins for me in the past, and I know that if I keep doing this, all I need to do is be right, and I could probably get another win in the future, then I'll accept all of these losses along the way, because that's really what it comes down to. I mean, you have to lose a lot if you're taking a stand. You can't help it. It's just what's going to happen, especially if it's a risky stand like Mark Ingram, when no one wants to play Mark Ingram because he's only getting 12 carries or 14 carries a game at that point. And by the way, even in that game, he only got like 12 carries, but three of them were for touchdowns. And he only got 40 yards total, I believe, if you remember correctly. Like, this was not some smash.
I think Lamar Jackson was the leading rusher for the Ravens that day still, I think, in terms of yardage.
Absolutely. And so you got to be willing to take a stand, and it's got to be right. That's the hardest part, and accept the consequence. So how do I, as a content provider, somebody who's advising about the game, right? We're breaking down the games and we're breaking down the showdown tonight, or I'm breaking down the Sunday slate. And NFL is a high variance sport. It's not easy, because even in the content provider situation, you're going to be wrong a lot. Like, what are you going to do? It's NFL football. Like, Dalvin Cook got hurt. Sorry. I didn't know. You know, it happened. Last week, Drake didn't do anything. Ah, sorry. Let's go back to him this week. Ah, he did it. You know, so finally. But how do you, as a player, then say, all right, I want somebody to tell me who to go all in on. But then if that's wrong, I'm never going to do it again because I lost all my money. And like, that's the hard part for people to get past. How did you get past that?
It's discovering your process. And I don't remember how I even stumbled upon DFS Army, but it starts by just learning these these things about, you know, contest selection, payout structure, ownership. That's where it all starts. So you can actually start to feel confident in your own process. And that just sounded real sales pitchy. That's funny, but it's true. Like, you know,
people don't have a process always get annoyed when you say trust the process. They're like, what process? I don't have a process. I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
And I used to get annoyed too. And and I keep saying this, but even before that, the baseball win, which is my first one, I felt like at one point, after thousands and thousands of super, super cheap 5-cent lineups, like, okay, no, I feel like I finally have a grasp on taking stands and lineup construction and all these different variables that you just have to learn. Where I was like, okay, no, this process thing, it's starting to make sense a little bit. So that's where it all starts for me.
Yeah, learning. I mean, obviously, learning how to use the tools. I think I'm so happy. I wish more people really took advantage of these 5-cent games and these 10-cent games and like these mini maxes. What you guys don't know is a couple of years ago, I was on the phone with people from DraftKings. They were asking me, because they call us like, hey, what do you think we should do? Or, you know, a survey. you know, what do you think? Like the VIP rep will call me and, you know, hey, do you mind talking to our design development team, whatever, and talk a little bit about like games that we should be doing or things that you... And I said one thing. I said, the thing that you're missing, because you did this ridiculous rule about 20 max on the $3 and $4 contest, which makes no sense whatsoever. None as a rule. Why is that a rule? Just have a 20 max. Mm-hmm. Put it whatever you want and have another one that's 150. But I said, I have a lot of people who want to max out these tournaments, who want to play that style. We have exposure to an optimizer that can build 150. We want to play it, but they don't want to pay $1,500 to max out. I believe that max entry is its own unique form of DFS that's different from crafting a lineup by hand. I think there's a different strategy to it. I think it's a different game in many ways. It has its own funness and strategy. Why can't I play it if I only have, you know, $100 to spend on the slate? It's not fair. And so then they introduced, I said, I would like you guys to do something for a dollar, for $2. I would rather, I actually wanted them just to do it with the three. I said, make three or four, not both of them, make one of them. But I've seen they've actually done some mini maxes before, but then they introduced the mini max and I said, thank you for doing this. Because at the time, FanDuel would do a quarter game. And I told them, I said, the FanDuel quarter game is filling up like 150,000 entries. You guys aren't doing anything. So that's how we got the mini max. I like to credit myself. I don't know if that was, maybe other people said it too, but it popped up like a week after I had that conversation. So I feel like I had something to do with it. I really do. But practicing on those contests is so key. And you could practice like, what I try to do is I practice like really extreme versions of what we're talking about right now. So whenever I'm entering a showdown, I'll have my regular showdown entries, but in the quarter and nickels and these little games, what I'll do is I'll just go all in on my lean. Now, they're usually wrong. I'm usually wrong.
Sure.
Sorry.
As is everyone.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They're like, well, what do you mean, geek? How are you usually wrong? How's Bobby Wow ever wrong? He's a fucking millionaire. Excuse me. He's a millionaire. He made $1 million. He can't be wrong ever. How is he wrong? And it's like, that's what happens. You take a stand. Bobby, how are you?
Yeah, man.
How is that possible? I don't believe it.
I'm wrong so often. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, you always see the wins, right? And if you, whatever community you're a part of, you see wins and maybe see ads pop up. And the truth is, like, the beautiful thing about the Army is you learn how to be a better DFS player and create that process. If someone came out with an article the other day about some, you know, you got to figure out what you're good at or what you're comfortable with or where you feel like you have an edge. Some people are better at max entering. That's just who they are strategy wise. Sometimes it's single entry. Sometimes it's three max. Those contests are all so different from each other that I think everybody has kind of a specialty or a niche. I suck even worse at single entry. I'm terrible. I'm so bad. And even, you know, even cash games, it's so hard for me to have a cash game mentality, but the GPP 150 thing, it feels like it's worked. And so I would just say in addition to finding that process, part of that is figuring out who you are in terms of a player
and what you're good at.
Right.
So true. Embracing variance, not everybody. So this is something that actually Keg and I discussed behind the scenes and on occasion. What kind of player are you? Are you somebody who loves to embrace the chalk, eat the chalk, go all in on the chalk? Or are you averse to the chalk? And for anybody who's watching this who doesn't know what chalk is, chalk means just clear, obvious, high-owned value on the slate. Somebody pops up and it's just like, you must play him because he's a starting point guard for a team. He's 3K. He's the cheapest salary. He's going to start. He's going to get 30 minutes. We've never seen this guy play before, but I mean, he's starting and, you know, he's going to have the ball in his hand and he's so cheap. How could he not? So we have to go all in. So it's like, now you have a choice. You could say, everybody's going to be on this guy. I've never seen him. I don't want to play him at all. I'm off. Or you could say, he's only going to be 60% owned and he's 3K and he's starting at point guard. What are they, nuts? I'm going 100% on this guy, and that's how I'll get my exposure. And certain mindsets go one way or the other. And I do think it's a personality that you can't change. Or you can change, but your natural personality will lead you. This is another thing I talk about with John Alessia, Statsational, a lot on the Vegas Line and Wolfpack pods. We always talk about this stuff because I tell him, you know, it's what I do well. I don't like MLB because you almost have to purposefully just go against the grain constantly. That's the whole sport is just, you know, this guy looks great. Don't play him. This pitcher looks amazing. Don't play him. That's like baseball. Let me play the offense playing against him. What we talked about before.
Yeah, leverage the variance. Yeah, that's what baseball is, really is.
It's just all of that. And then football is kind of like that. Football is kind of like that where, you know, even yesterday, everybody going to play Godwin? Bashard Perriman. Everybody want to play Julio? Calvin Ridley. Everybody want to play, you know, one running back? Running backs.
How about Zeke? I mean, Zeke was one of your calls yesterday. He was amazing. And he was 5% owned in my contest.
I'm not crazy about the calls that the great ones from yesterday really were like Drake. Going back to him.
Drake was greatness. Nuts.
Zeke was more of a terrible matchup, good player call. Like that is a classic play that we talk about on the Players Club and other things all the time. You've got to have the mindset to do it. It's worked better in
mentality.
I'd say Julio was more that yesterday, actually. Julio was the best example yesterday of on the road at the 49ers. Julio hasn't done much this year, but we knew that Richard Sherman was out. Yeah, out of contention. But we knew that Richard Sherman was out and he would have a better match. And there was no Calvin Ridley, so that made it interesting because if they're throwing, it's probably going to be to Julio. There's less competition there.
Yeah.
Hard to play it. Very tough to pull the trigger. But if you did, you probably won $1 million. As long as he was combined with Barkley and Drake, you probably won $1 million. Like that's how you won. That's how you won the million. So then it's not just playing Julio, but embracing 20% Julio, you know, or 25 when he was going to be 2% owned. Not a garbage player. You know, we're not talking about 30%. Denzel Ward, Dr. Newman, Chris Conley, I don't know, whatever junk player was replacing DJ Shark, Keelan Cole. We're talking about Julio Jones, like a known commodity that's been pretty good at times in his career and hasn't had the best of years. But yesterday was like the day of all the people who were supposed to have good seasons finally having a good game.
Yeah.
Like, finally. Yeah. Oh, Zeke.
Yep.
You're good? I forgot. Wait. Zeke, you can score over 20. Julio, you can score over 11. It's wonderful. So, good stuff. Embracing the variance. Any other thoughts on embracing bias?
I don't know. I think what's the big thing out now? Is it the Enneagram? Have you heard of the Enneagram assessment? It's like a personality tool.
Okay,
take a look at the Enneagram. Maybe you need to come out with something about DFS and the Enneagram and how your personality type influences the way you play DFS. That would be fascinating because I think you're onto something, man.
That would be awesome. I know it's the thing. I know it's the thing. And what I say to people, and this is controversial, and it's funny because we had a lot of these conversations in the NBA chat today and yesterday and a little bit. I'm trying to get it to the point in DFS Army where there's a lot more constructive discussion going on in these channels because, you know, part of what happens is I get lost in my geek speak room, you know, and I'm just in there and there's so much going on in there that I'm not necessarily watching every other channel. And I jump into NBA and just hear, oh man, I've lost for 20 every day this month. And I'm like, first of all, how are you losing every day? Our optimals are hitting at a 66% clip in NBA. Like if you have not won all month, you're doing something very horrifically wrong. That we need to correct, dude. All you need to optimize and you're like winning at a 55-60% clip. Well, I did that, but I did it once and I didn't win and then I didn't want to do it anymore. And I'm like, dude, if you allow one night's results, like Saturday night, I played NBA. I came out zero or like $6. It was like $700 in, $5 out. Like, it was so bad.
Those nights.
It was horrible. And of course, it was the one night where I fought against the domination stage. I mean, don't get me started. I think the Dom was right. I was like, why isn't it giving me Harden? I adored him, and it still won't give me Harden. Or Paul George. Now I'm locking him, and I forced it with a lock, and it was a big mistake. Never do that. Never do that. But because Harden was – but the point was, I was like, that's a one-night thing. One night. You cannot judge based on one night. But what you should judge based on is, hey, longer – one of the things that I'm against – I don't think people have to play cash games. You don't have to. But what I want everybody to embrace is small tournaments. Now, you've already graduated to the point where you figured out, I have one thing I like to do, and I like to mass multi-enter. This is my game, and I'm good at it, and I've looked at my past, and you know what? That's where I'm most successful. That's where I made most of my money. These other contests, I don't really find myself profitable. Then embrace it. Embrace that. Just be that guy. That's awesome. That's an awesome thing to be. But there's also people who are like, not that good at mass. Most people are really not that good at mass multi-entry from what I've seen. And it's hard to do it.
Or don't have the time, right? I mean, most people who, it's just hard to find the time even. So
you also have to have a mindset. I don't think it's just simply about the time. It is about the time in terms of that's very, very important. But there's a certain mindset that it takes to win them.
Oh, definitely.
And if you don't have it, I embrace the differences in people across the board. Like even with the DFS Army staff, getting to know people, you try to figure out, hey, what are they good at? So then I could put them in a position to do something that they're good at, right? Because I don't want to have somebody who's great at writing doing spreadsheets. You're a really great writer, right? You know, or somebody who's good with games theory. So you have all these different talents, you got to figure it out. You have to embrace what you're good at as a player, right? Some players are good at crafting one lineup. I told you, I had the few weeks where I had to fully and exclusively concentrate for the King of the Beach stuff on just one lineup. And man, it was a different experience. A, it worked out really well. Like both of those lineups were very, very good, or all three of them were very, very good. Fourth place in the 200, 14th place. So it's like, hey, when I sit down and all I think about is one lineup and I fully concentrate all my energy on it, man, it turns out to be a pretty good lineup. Not good enough to win a Millie Maker, but good enough to win a high dollar 50 person contest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe that's what one should play. If it costs me $750 to make 150 lineups in a $5 contest, but let's say I figured out I'm not that good at mass multi-entry. I'm too chalky and I'm not embracing variance enough. It's just my personality won't allow it. I'm not saying this is me. I'm just saying as a player who's listening to this conversation between us, thinking about who they are as a player. Now, we know who we are, I think. I don't know who I am. You know who you are.
It takes a while to get there. And I guess you never, at the end of the day, you never truly know. Yeah.
No, you do. You do. You know, if you're embracing game theory, if that's your mindset, if you've got a GPP mindset, as we like to say, I'll give you an example. Somebody in social media reached out in like a mean way, you know, because that's what people do on social media. They're not kind in a mean way and said, you guys suck. I saw your GPP sheet and it said to fade Barkley and you're terrible at DFS. So I'm like, wait, I had an all four star all play and he was like a core play on the cash game sheet. What is this? So I looked over at the GPP sheet and yes, it said fade Saquon Barkley and had a good reason. Hey, he's going to be 35% owned. The projection is super high. Yes, I get that he's in the greatest possible spot at home against the worst team against the run and everything lines up, but Barkley hasn't passed 20 points all year. And in this situation, if he's going to be 35% owned and I'm going to attack a tournament, I'm going to fade him.
Yeah. It's the right play.
It was the right play. That's right.
Yeah, the right play beforehand, right? Hindsight's 20/20 and all these things. But
hindsight is the right play. Now, that is the thing. It was the right play. Did it work? No. But if you saw that and you said, you're an idiot, you said to fade this guy, you suck at DFS, the reality is, no, you're probably just not somebody who should play in tournaments. Like, don't mass multi-enter. It's not for you. Right. Yeah. If this is how your mind works and you think, oh, a player in an amazing spot who everybody's going to play this week as super chalk actually comes through and then I'm going to be really mad that I didn't, then you shouldn't play in tournaments.
And that's okay. Like you said, that's okay, but you have to be willing to discover who you are. And the only way to do that is to play. Find a community you trust and play.
There's only one community to trust. I think we know which one that is.
I trust this place, man, with my life.
I think we know which one that is. But all right, 1 hour in.
One more thing I want to add. I think the mental thing is interesting. I think I've seen that play out even in the chat, not only in the way that people construct lineups, but in how people lose and how people win. You know, I think certain personalities, the way they lose, you know, they take one loss very hard. And you've seen certain coaches reach out and respond to that in ways that they can relate to. Some people, they lose big and they're ready. You know, they're already waiting for the sheet to come out for the next day. So, you know, understanding yourself mentally it sounds weird, but it's super important in DFS world. And that doesn't get enough press. And I'm just so happy you guys are diving into that too. That's going to be really important coming up here. I'm excited.
The psychology of it is so key. And it's kind of like if you're investing and your financial advisor, they used to call them stockbrokers. And that's not a stockbroker. It's a financial advisor. When I was involved in it, it was called stockbroker. It was a sleazier type of thing. But right. I never sold stock, but that's what they call it. But they will say to you, hey, what's your tolerance for risk? And you say, what are you talking about? I want to make the most money I can, and I don't want to lose anything. I don't know what this means. I don't know what my tolerance for risk is. You don't know. It's a confusing question when they're asking, I don't know. What do you mean risk? I want to make a lot of money. But how do you feel if you lose money? I feel really bad. So what's your tolerance for risk? So it's like, you don't know. But that's the reality. Some people will say, you know what? I get it. It's a stock market. Goes up and down. But, you know, I feel like I can handle the swings. I'm cool as a cucumber. Put me in stocks, right? All stock, all equities. Next guy comes in. He's nervous. He goes, maybe they're a little older. And I don't like to lose money. I'm very uncomfortable with that. I don't have much tolerance. Well, you have to take some risk. But, okay, let's put that guy in, you know, a much more of a secure and slow moving set of things. Now, they're both, in essence, two people trying to accomplish the same thing, trying to make money with investments. One guy says, I'll take on the risk. I get it. I'm cool with the swings. That person actually will probably make more money over time. The other guy says, I'm just not comfortable with that. Put me into municipal bonds. I'll make my 3% tax-free. Very happy. And you have to figure out who you are, like with that. Like me and my wife have this argument because she's like, oh, I don't want any risk. You know, when we talk to our you know, the 529 C10, which you should be doing for your kids. I hope you have one. And if you don't, damn well better after this year, have a 529 account for your kid, right? When you sign up for that, they ask you like, well, how much do you want to be conservative, aggressive? My wife hears the word aggressive. She's like, I don't want any of that. I don't know what that is. I just don't want it. Give me the moderate and the conservative. I don't want any. That aggressive, I don't like the sound of that at all. And I'm like, no. 40% aggressive. Okay. We're going to be aggressive. So
we're in similar situations there. That's funny.
Yeah. But this literally happened like 3 days ago. This is not a made up story. Like we were just put in 3 days ago. She's like, aggressive. I don't like the sound of that. I said, no. Got to get some aggressive there. The other ones like are very slow. So yeah, I would go on aggressive. Everybody has a different tolerance for this stuff. Somebody's asking, what's a good percentage tonight in cash tournaments? Tonight, on night. It doesn't matter. That's really what it comes down to. Like literally what we're talking about here is cash games. Yeah, we have something called the DFS. I'm going to put him up here. In DFS Army, we have something called the DFS Army ladder. Okay. This was something I invented in 2012. Bobby, if you want to know how long this went back, this was my first ever strategy. It was called FanDuel Winning Strategies in the blog that was called dailyfantasyadvice.net. Back in 2012, I wrote an article because I had figured out when I started playing on FanDuel in 2011, a system for like how to enter contests without losing money, because I hated losing money. I was very averse to losing money. So I was like, back then it was a lot easier, but I was like, oh, if I take my $50 and I just make sure that my cash games, which I was winning almost all the time, like it was just different then. It was not like now. It was very easy. No one had projections or an optimizer. There was nothing. People hadn't figured out to look at the Vegas lines. That was my big innovation. I was like, oh, let me just look at the game total and that'll tell me what games to be on. Like, oh my goodness, that was the innovation of the century in 2012. Sure. No one was doing that. So I'd figured that out and really quickly had to project based off of just looking at the game total and being like, oh, if on average these guys score this much, you know it now. So I figured out, all right, if I just put 50 to 60% of my money in cash games, then even if I lost in the tournament that but made the cash line, I would be break even for that lineup. So it gave me another bullet. And my whole goal was, I had this idea as like, to win a tournament, I just need more. The more bullets I have to throw against the tournament, the better my odds, because one in 15,000 is a lot worse than one in 7,500, which is if I threw two at it, or one in whatever if I throw three, or one in 1,500 if I put 100. So I figured the more times I enter a lineup, the better my chances of eventually finding that elusive win. So when you talk about how much you can do 50 to 60% cash games and just leave the rest, you know, 70, 80% for some people. But I also will say, and this is interesting, and I know it's not something you would do, Bobby, but I'm okay with nothing in cash games, but as long as the tournaments are small. So if you're not comfortable playing in cash games, maybe you don't have that much bankroll, my focus would be on contests with like 10 entrants, 30 entrants. It's not that different from a cash game. 50 entrants, 75. That's where most of your money, like put 70% of your money in those. And then jerk around with the other 30% of your money in the MME, in the nickel game. You know, it's hard for me to just like come up with dollar amounts, because somebody could be talking about $12. Somebody could be talking about $1,200. It's all the same for me. It doesn't matter. It's all ROI. It's all percentages. I don't care if you do $5 in the nickel, $7.50 in the nickel, and then another $12.50 in other contests that are more conservative. Or if you did $7,500, it doesn't make a difference. It's just about percentages. So final thoughts, Bobby. What's your lean for tonight? Who are we going all in on?
I don't know how I'm going all in on yet. I just know that
fading the Michael Thomas.
The Colts will most likely be 100% of my captains tonight.
Colts MVP will be 100% of his captains or MVPs. I love it. That is so Bobby. That is so you. I'm telling you guys, I get like a DM from Bobby's like, I'm totally fading, you know, and whoever that chalk is just like, oh, I'm definitely not playing it. Every time. I'm like, yes. All right. You've just
quick word of advice. If you're going to play the tourneys tonight, you on FanDuel, the big one is nuts. 90,000 people, 100,000 people, whatever it is now. So many lineups. They come out with a second one usually. I think it's half the main prize, but you're only going up against, you know, 15% of the entries. So they don't do it every time, but if you see that pop up later, jump into that one instead of the main one, because your chances of winning are so much better.
You know, and an extra note to that one, pro players, what they'll do is they'll max both of them, but they'll put their best ones in the first one. And like the first 150, like they'll run 300, right?
300, right. Oh, geez.
The first 150, this is very common. By the way, as a DraftKings does it too. They'll have two $10 contests for every one. So if I make 150, 300 lineups, the first 150 go in the better one. Then the bottom group go in the second one. And a lot of people play that way. So you get, when you enter that second one, you're going up against a lot of people's like 151 through 300 lineups, not their best group. So technically there's a lot of garbage lineups in those second contests that come up. Like, it's important. It is. And the cash line, I'd love to measure it. You know what? I bet we could measure it. I may do that. I'm going to go look at cash lines after this. There are places where we can, the results database on RotoGrinders, we could look, but I bet you I bet you, without having ever looked at it, that the cash line for the second contest that comes out is higher than the first one. Even though it's a smaller contest, just because people are throwing their garbage lineups in there. I'm telling you that happens. So I'm going to check that after this. Let's call it a day. Bobby, thank you so much for coming on. Anytime, you are welcome. If you ever want to do anything DFS Army-wise, we are going to do it. All you have to do is say, Kevin, I want to, yes. Whatever, yes. I will always say yes. So you're the GOAT. We love you. You are.
Hey, love you guys, man. This is awesome. Thanks for letting me talk randomly about things. I love learning from you. Let's keep doing it. This is exciting. Awesome.
Thanks so much for jumping on this. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next time.
See ya.